Paula DeAngelo Show, a unique voice in conservative talk radio, can now be heard irradiating stupidity, teaching critical thinking, and encouraging confidence. So forget the Mickey Mouse madness and get back to the facts with your host, Paula DeAngelo.
Oh, I'm just thankful it's not 90-some plus, so I'm smoking hot in my truck, sitting in here just dying. I'll get studio space one of these days. I got so many things to be blessed and thankful for, and one of them is to be here today, to be able to get one more person waking up, one more person listening, one more person to get it right in November. We'll get to the seriousness. We're going to have a great show, but all I want to say is this, before I make you laugh, I am glad that the POTUS gave his truth speech yesterday. I had this conversation earlier today with Wilson when I said I would rather have him, because I was listening to Hannity. I don't know why Hannity was spitting mad about the speech. I'd rather lay it out that he's a sympathetic, muzzy thug. I mean, come on. Ugh. Anyways, Eric, how are you tonight?
We had some good discussions about Muslims and Marxism in America and how they're using the Muslims to push a lot of this issue.
Well, I'm here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, transplanted from the love of crude oil. That is a place that I did not think I was ever going to leave. And I'm going to share a little bit of an oil field story, and then how I'm helping I'm doing my part here in Minneapolis. We're gonna have a guest tonight, Bob Enos, because I would love to have my hand in trying to stop the further destruction of Minneapolis, Minnesota, with the Somali refugee problem that we have here. But I as always, I promise to make you laugh, because we have to laugh a little bit right now, because sometimes the Mickey Mouse madness bullshit can just take over, and you'll get into this panic mode if you don't just sit back and laugh, and then also see the good in what is destructing, self-destructing on the sympathetic muzzy thugs watch. I mean, it's evident in that speech, but I want to share something, because I texted all you guys. I told you what I was going to do. I was going to talk about how do you get a house bitch without the house bitch knowing that he's being taken as a house bitch. But I'm going to explain where this all goes to, because I'm going to tie it all together, because it's not just random stories. But, you know, I've been doing this for 6 years, as I was listening to Sean Hannity today saying he couldn't believe how long he's been trying to get people to pay attention and wake up. And you know what, Eric? I can't wait to get back on with Sean Hannity. As I sat there and listened to him today, and he said, if people really understood what was going on, more people would get involved. And I thought, well, Sean, I think you'd be pretty damn happy what I've been up to for the almost 6 years that I've been sitting in this truck trying to get people to wake up and pay attention. And sometimes I get a little ahead of myself in my overzealousness to get to my show. And, you know, sometimes, but there's a benefit. And you know, you never know that you're creating your house bitch. But this is a true story. So one night I got in, and I couldn't wait to get to Fox, because, of course, I watch Fox to add a little bit to the material for my show. Well, I was hanging out with George Patton Jr. that night out in the oil field, North Dakota. George, on the other hand, couldn't wait to watch the History Channel. There was a special about George Patton, which is why he has the alias that he does. George Patton Jr. always gave me a lot of history to bring to the show. I also conducted my show many times from his rig location, from his night hands, company man shack. But so on this particular night, we were grilling together, we were making a salad, we were yucking it up, and I ran to the remote, Eric, and in my overzealousness to get the Fox to find out what was going on, I done something, and of course, the TV won't turn on. And
that's frustrating.
Well, so then I kept messing with it, and finally, you know, George looks at me and he says, give me that remote, Red. Let me figure out what you've been doing over there while you've been jacking around with everything. So I handed him the remote, he got a little frustrated, kind of threw it down on the couch. And I said to him, I said, here, we can call customer service. But here's an insight as to what it's like to be in the oil field. And Eric, you can relate to this. So we got to call into customer service to, I think it was the cable company. I don't think it was Dish or something. But of course, they're asking us what the address is. Well, you're in a man camp trailer on a pile of scoria rock on dirt. You don't necessarily have an address. You have possibly a lease name, something like that. And of course, we're just minions in the oil field. So who's on the account and all that information, all this Mickey. So finally, and you know how much I love customer service, Dot or Feather, no matter what they are, you can't understand them. They always speak so softly. They can't actually answer the questions. There's so much red tape involved in just trying to get, which I finally said to them, I said, look, I said, why don't you talk to me like I'm your sister and I can't get my TV to turn on and you're not customer service and I'm not sitting in the oil field in a man camp trailer on a pile of dirt with no address to give you, just tell me how to fix the damn thing. Do you think you can do that? And he started to giggle. And I said, why didn't you be white about this whole thing? I said, I've kind of done a few things here to aggravate my dear friend. I want him to watch the History Channel. I want to watch a little bit of Fox. And then I said what I ask everybody. I said, are you voting? Do you pay attention? Do you listen? I couldn't miss the opportunity, Eric. I just couldn't walk away from it.
Yeah. Those are the good old days in the oil patch, weren't they?
I'm assimilating in Minneapolis. I'm working in the construction field. I work for great guys at Great Northern Granite. I get to work with good old boys and rednecks. I get to wear my steel toe boots, my jeans. I get to have great conversations about what's going on in the world. So I am having a lot of fun while we're all waiting. And as I said this in a meeting earlier today, what is it going to take to get it right in November? But here's the next thing I want to tell you guys, because I am doing my part. So I am hanging out. Everybody asks me, why are you here? Why are you in Minneapolis? Well, I made a decision to come back here. Because I have a best friend here, and all of my friends and family are in the oil field, and we're all spread out throughout the U.S. right now, and trying to pick up and go somewhere and start completely over was more daunting than I wanted to. I've done that a couple of times now. So I came back here to hang out with Wilson. Eric, when he confided to me that he's up in age, and so I got to be concerned about, because I'm partially responsible for this whole situation, Eric. Do you know that when I first met Wilson, one of the things that he said to me was that he thought that I was radical in my views. It was probably a month or two or three when I was first back when he looked at me and he finally said to me, I never did think that I would look to you and say to you, you were right. It is us against them, the establishment against the people. And do you know that he's almost more militant about watching Fox than I am? I mean, I got rid of his bunny ears. I did. I got Fox on. I got rid of his damn bunny ears. So, but here's the thing. So he called me the other day and he says, I can't believe I got to confide this to you. But he said, I'm sleepwalking. And he says, I find myself in my kitchen with my fire extinguisher, putting out the microwave or the oven or some random thing that I've caught on fire. He says, because he's dreaming about setting fire to a mosque. And I thought, how do I fix this whole problem but yet get a win out of the whole solution? So I was driving along and I thought, Eric, maybe I should go a little easy on him because I think he's still having nightmares over being terrorized by being Jehovah's Witness to death with all of that. And, you know, he was tied up in the garage for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought, okay, I called the Killery campaign and I told them that a very affluent intellectual somewhat recluse with a lot of money behind him was interested in contributing to the Hillary campaign. Okay, I didn't call it the Hillary campaign when I called them Hillary's campaign quarters, but so, and then I said, why don't you come this weekend and pick him up? And he really wants to see a couple of things and go to a couple of places. So here's how you ladies best be prepared to get this big, you know, sack full of loot out of this dude for your campaign contributions. I said, in this campaign tour bus that you're going to put him in, I want you to play nonstop clips of, Hillary. Her barking and screaming would be the best. How about some close-ups of Pelosi? Because especially when that her head's bobble shaking and she's making all of those comments. Like, remember when she said that the federal government was responsible for the inventing the iPhone?
Yeah. Yeah. She's got that Obama lingo, right? You didn't create that stuff. The government did.
How about pass it? We don't need to read it. Just pass it. Or, you know, I know none of this would fly if I said something like I wanted them to somehow pipe through, you know, Pelosi's lips moving but saying, come on, big boy, I want you. Because if Wilson saw Pelosi saying, come on, big boy, I want you, he'd go screaming. He would come after me. I mean, there would be. But yeah. Remember, he's old and he's little. And then I said, so Pelosi, and then get some of the finest moose shell speeches. You know, like the one where she says that the White House was built by slaves, and you know how poorly she's mistreated, even though, you know, she's the First Lady of the United States. I don't know what crack pipe she's smoking off of. But anyways, so then I said, while all of this is playing, and make sure it's nonstop and very loud, and I said, Ben, make sure that campaign tour bus goes down every single road in all of Minnesota and greater that's under construction. Well, do you know how long he'll be occupied in the Hillary campaign hot dog wagon? If you consider the fact that you won't find a road that isn't under construction until you hit either South Dakota, North Dakota, Canada, Wisconsin, or Iowa, you know what, Eric? I've got a long, peaceful, at least a couple of days, free and clear of Wilson. So now who's going to occupy my time? Oh, I was like, what the... Unless he ran for the hills too, and he said, gee, I better not cross her. Well, while we're waiting for Eric to come on, I want to ask one question while we're waiting to go into, we've got our first break. You know, the other thing that I did ask Wilson this, I asked him, when did man buns become the norm? Is this some new revolution? You know, if you didn't hear me go off about man sponges before, yeah, that's when I was living with about 20-some truck drivers, and they all had man sponges. You know, the nylon little things. There's a little background noise there. The nylon things that you take into the shower, and all these truckers had their own man sponge with their own color, and I had to take them to task, and I disciplined them. I asked them where their manhood was. Would y'all have a meeting with Mary Kay and you decided what we're going to have so you didn't use each other's man sponge? When did it become the norm for grown men to shave their head up to the man bun and put a man bun on their head? I don't get it. Eric, are you back with me or did you run away too?
Yeah, I think Obama cut in and cut me off.
All right, well... We're heading into our first break. We're going to bring Bob from, I believe he is down south of me. I don't want to, okay, he'll clarify when he comes on here. But we're going to get into, first we're going to talk about, like I said, I'm glad that the POTUS had his truth speech. He is a sympathizing, muzzy thug. And I would rather have it all out in the open because we've got to fight, baby, fight. We've got to get it right in November. Otherwise, Orlando, Florida will be an everyday occurrence. And God bless America. We'll be right back.
I'm here to introduce Trust Vets. If you could choose between doing business with an American military veteran or a complete stranger, who would you choose? If you're like me, you would choose the veteran. What if every time you needed to hire a professional for work around your home or office, you could choose to do business with veterans? Friends, the time has come. Visit the online directory of veterans at trustvets.com to find painters, plumbers, dentists, bankers, and more. Whether you need your windows washed, your lawn mowed, or a handyman for a project, you can find verified American military veterans who would be proud to do the work for you. Many people want better for our veterans. Trust Vets is a simple way to make good on those intentions. You can help before hiring any local service. Visit trustvets.com. Come and join us in doing business with American military veterans. Trust Vets. They've definitely earned it.
We are back, Bella D'Angelo, Eric Olson, and before I bring on our guest, Bob Ennis, I want to paraphrase, which I love to do. It's Billy Joel, Pressure. And here it is. You will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face. You used to call me paranoid, but even you cannot avoid. Fairy, you have some cosmic rationale and your Peter Pan advice. All your life is Channel 13 Sesame Street. You cannot handle pressure. Look, the sympathizing Muzzy thug that he is, he lives in Ellen DeGeneres' world. He runs around giving, you know, illogical answers, dismissive, just potential, just childlike. We need a leader. We need to blow ISIS the hell up, take the oil, take the money, build a wall, stop the building of the army from within, which that is exactly what this resettlement of all these refugees is building. And if you get to the point, and if you haven't gotten to the point where you say, where is my God, where is my country, this is a fight between good and evil. It is a fight between Christianity and Islam. I'm glad the Muzzy sympathetic thug POTUS gave his speech of truth today. The what does it matter? He's beginning to sound like Hillary after Benghazi. What does it matter? What does it matter? Go hug Morrissey, Iran, and the Muslim Brotherhood, and then go golfing. I mean, 218 days. Go Trump. This just, so, and then this speech. So everybody's been talking about, you know, he's going rogue on this speech. He, you know, he's losing his mind. The thing is, I heard another radio talk show gentleman this morning that gave this analogy. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. All I want to get to the point is, whether or not we understand where it's all coming from, the result is where we are today. But this other talk show host was talking about the fact that the Muzzy sympathizer thug was abandoned as a young boy by his father. So he is taking his hate towards the country to gain love and sympathy from his father, because his father wanted to destroy America. And the thing is that the reason that the sympathizing Muzzy thug is now losing his control or his mind or whatever the hell he's doing is because when he first saw the GOP lineup, he wasn't threatened. Why would he? Cruz isn't going to get it done. Rubio, Bush, the rest of it. I mean, they're all in it together, right? They all go back in the back room and smoke cigars and do shots and laugh about the whole takeover and hijacking of this country and the establishment. What he didn't know and what he couldn't account for was Trump. And Trump has hit a nerve in him. Trump has got him a little nervous because Trump has a chance at making the sympathizing Muzzy thug's legacy about ISIS, and the icing on the cake is that selfie stick video that he did where he's air kissing and looking like, I mean, he should be a comedian. But anyways, Bob, welcome to the program tonight. Very honored. Got introduced to you to Ron Branson, and we talked a couple of times on the phone. And I just, you know, I told you I want to talk a little bit about the speech in this segment, and then we're going to get into the refugee settlement of Somalia, how we support Somalia in the next two segments, because you've got a lot of wealth and knowledge. What was your take on the sympathizing Muzzy Thugs speech yesterday?
You know, and thanks for having me on, and my good friend Ron Branson was right, Bella. I had to make sure that I had a really good meal before I talked to you, because he said if I didn't have plenty of fuel here and plenty of energy, I would never keep up with you. So I'm glad I took his advice, and I'm ready to roll with you. You know, I think the president finds himself between a rock and a hard place here. You know, he's been trying very hard, as you know, to avoid the labeling of all of this activity as radical Islam. And we talked about this earlier, and I think that the reason he's having trouble with this is that most Muslim scholars would never admit to you, or would never suggest that there's any such thing as radical Islam. There is either a following of Islam in the literal broad sense, or cherry-picking it like many Christians do when they want to go to church. These guys that are the terrorist thugs that we read about every day are not this narrow niche of Islam that cherry picks, as the president says, a certain verse out of the Quran and perverts it to his own immoral purposes. Hardly at all. He's a literalist who now has the ability to read the Quran on his own because he's literate and because he knows social media and he knows how to do his homework, and he's not using the imams as the go-between as he used to. And now he takes the literal words from Muhammad, from the Hadith, from the Sirah, the what's called the trilogy of Islamic thought. He applies that literally to his world, and the literal application is exactly what we see in the world today, which is a holy war being waged against the non-Muslim world. We've seen it for 1,400 years. We've seen the table set since, I would say, the hostage-taking at the Munich Olympics in 1972. This has been a very patient, steady, methodical military engagement that probably is now in hyperdrive.
Well, it is in hyperdrive because he's one of them. And here, I want to break this down a little bit simpler, because I have a lot of people that tune into this show that don't typically listen to conservative talk radio, and I want to give these simple analogies of when I started to pay attention, because we can talk very high level or we can make it this simple. I will never forget the day. This is way before I ever thought I was going to be doing what I'm doing, sitting in a pickup truck and ranting away for hours and hours on a cell phone every single night. I listened to Dennis Miller back in the day. I was working for Doherty Employment Group. I was in all the manufacturing floors. I knew how many illegal immigrants were already here in Minneapolis. I already knew that Somalians were making a disruption in the production floors, because I worked for a staffing company, and I had to sit in the boardrooms while we were translating bathroom etiquette signage. We were having to make accommodations in the production lines for prayer. And this was over 12, 13, 14 years ago. And I thought to myself, who the hell are these people? I mean, I can't get away with asking for any special accommodation. Then there was a day, probably about 5 years ago, not too very long into my radio show, I had a young woman that came on my show, and she wanted to share her story. She was very heartbroken. She had a best friend that was Muslim. They'd done everything together. They'd raised their babies together. They did dinner parties. They shopped. They did all these things. She started reading the Quran. She went to her friend and she said, I have to ask you, if war is waged and you are called to go to war and I'm alongside you as your neighbor, will you kill me? Her best friend said, Yes. Look, there's not assimilation.
Because her best friend was really not her best friend, because the Quran tells its followers that you will under no circumstances befriend the non-believer, the kafir, the Gentile, whatever you want to call him. And the only reason that you will pretend to like him is to deceive him, is to advance the cause of Allah. And in that case, you should lie, and you should deceive, and you should lie by omission if it's for the greater good. But don't ever mistake that for being their friends, because they're not like you, and we're not like them. I'm not making this up. It's not opinion. It's simply written in the books. If you really want to understand, in my mind, if you really want to understand the Muslim mind or the Somali mind or whatever we'll call it tonight, the first place you need to start is to understand and learn about who Muhammad was and why. Just as Christians are taught to hold Jesus as an example of living, to emulate his way of living, so Muslims are taught to treat Muhammad the same way. And if you start to read, and it won't take long, if you start to read about this man's life and you realize the kind of man that this following holds out as a role model, you can't conclude anything other than this is a cult, a very large cult, but it's a cult.
It's a cult cloaked in a cloth of religion, trying to make us believe that is religion. And here's the thing. I try to get people on a simple level to understand there is no assimilating. You cannot sit down at a table and negotiate. You cannot give them land. You cannot give them enough money. You cannot give them anything, because it is convert or die.
And this is the sad part, I'm afraid, about the haughtiness and the bravado of the United States, that the world has not been able to bring this problem to heel for 1,400 years, that the Afghanis got their hat handed to them by one of the strongest military forces in the world, which was the Soviet Union and Russia. But somehow, because we're Americans, we're going to be able to figure out what they couldn't figure out? No, we're supposed to learn a lesson from history. And we probably lost a couple of great opportunities to seize that territory that's known as Persia, to claim those oil fields as our own, and to pave most of it over for a commuter parking lot. But we ignored that opportunity that was presented to us on the first Gulf War. We didn't have the courage for it on the second Gulf War. And I can't help but thinking that the world today is reliving that period in the 1930s, where in Great Britain, if you'll remember, during the rise of Adolf Hitler, it was Winston Churchill who was a lone voice in the wilderness saying, we've got to stem this thing before it's out of control. But the Brits didn't want to hear any of that, because that involved war. So instead, they listened to a guy named Neville Chamberlain, who preached the policy of appeasement and said, no, you just have to throw them a few crumbs and everything will be fine. We know how that ended. And it seems to me we're in the exact same place 60 years later.
We're in the exact same place. We're coming up against our next break. If you're talking to somebody, and that's, my purpose is to really get everybody motivated to go out and make a difference and to talk to people so that we can get this done in November. You're talking to a young individual that tells you that they're fine with this resettlement. They're fine with all of the immigrants, as they call them, coming to this country. Give them this example. Throw them a bag of M&Ms, and as you're walking away, say, only one will kill you. You'll get this answer. What do you mean? You say, I don't know if it's the brown one, the orange one, the yellow one, the red one. Only one will kill you. I had a statement that came back to me. A young man said to me, I'll just bite a little off every single head. And then that's when I turned around and I said, and ISIS doesn't behead. Get it? through our heads. We are facing an enemy that we cannot mathematically win unless we get to the logical side of educating and waking people up, because people need to understand this isn't an enemy that we have fought before, and we have not won the war yet, but we've got to figure out a different way to attacking it. I almost believe in being a nationalist in Trump's viewpoint. But anyways, we'll be right back. We're up against our next break. We got to fight, baby, fight.
You don't find any better guys in a family team than polar builders. These guys are not the storm chasers. They are the GAF and Timberline certified polar builders. Upgrades your home needs after hail damage to roofing, siding, and windows. Call and ask for Bella at Polar Builders, 952-895-8100. Again, that is Bella at Polar Builders, 952-895-8100.
We are back. Bella D'Angelo. We've got Eric Olson and Bob Enos. It drives me crazy as when we were on that very short break, which our breaks was getting a little bit longer with more advertising and sponsors. But, that's the fundamental thing that people, they've got it so ingrained in their head, Bob, that they say this is an immigrant country. We've all come from somewhere. We are to all be given this great opportunity. But the thing is, and I've said this so many times, unfortunately, and again, I want to say my prayers out to all of those that were lost in Orlando, Florida. But my fear was that if there wasn't something that was proving Donald J. Trump's statement about banning these refugees and stopping the Muslim until we figure out what we're dealing with. Now, the thing is as dark and morose as it is, we had a huge terror attack in Orlando, Florida, which it makes one more person realize, and I want people to understand, this isn't a one-time occurrence. If we don't get this right, and if we let Hillary, who I'm sorry, but she's just the same. She's going to keep the borders open. Look at all the money that she gave through the Clinton Foundation to all those countries that are Sharia law compliant. I mean, it's what happened in Orlando, Florida will be a regular occurrence. And here in Minneapolis, which we're going to get into, we're going to change gears a little bit. Here in Minneapolis, which I don't know when it started because I was in the oil field almost 6 years ago. I come back. I knew about the huge Somali population, but I really didn't know the details of it, how deep it ran, the money trail behind it. I know Eric's got some great questions for you. So let's open it up to the real problem that we have with the Somali refugee infiltration here in Minneapolis. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, Bob. Eric here. You know, I've done a lot of research on immigration and refugee settlements, and we push the issue of the cost of what this is costing America and dollars and cents, and then the issue that they don't assimilate, that our federal forms are in 21 languages where the law states they have to come in, be productive citizens, speak English, all that stuff. So somehow they're getting all around this, and I know it's hit Minnesota really hard with the Somalis and the crime and stuff you got there, the what Ron Branstner called the slave labor. They bring them in and kick out the real labor and bring these refugees in and pay them subnormal wages, and so you might just address some of those issues, what it does cost you guys and America.
Well, you know, Eric, it's a good question. I did a radio program for some guys here in Minnesota about a month ago. A month ago, because it was April 15th. And, of course, normally April 15th is tax day.
Right.
So I said, yeah, I talked to the radio personality, and I said, let's do a hypothetical tax return for what the federal government tells us is a typical Somali family in Minnesota. And here's what the family looks like. The family will be a husband and a wife, and of course, that's a whole different subject altogether. But let's presume the family is a husband and a wife, and the World Health Organization tells us that their studies of fertility rates indicate that the average size family is 6.5 children. I think that's conservative, but let's go with that number. In Minnesota, the unemployment rate as of 2014, according to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, in Minnesota, for all refugees, was 38%. That was 10 times higher than the unemployment rate for the entire population. But I'm going to, and I keep trying to give the benefit of the doubt to the refugees. So let's add, and they make $10 an hour on average, which pretty much jibes with the average pay in meatpacking, which is a big draw in the northern Midwest. So we've got a couple. Let's assume they both work full-time. I don't know how you do that with seven kids, but let's say they do, right? So between the two of them, they're making $40,000. They each get their exemption for themselves off the top and for their 6.5 kids. And when I ran the numbers, it came out that after their exemptions and deductions on a short form, that $40,000 gross after deductions came to a net income of $1,600, which meant that their total tax bill for the year on $40,000 to the federal government was $171.
Wow.
So, but I'm going to spin this out a little bit more. Because their net income was so low, that $1,600, it meant that they could qualify for Section 8 federally subsidized housing, which in Minnesota came to about $700 a month, and they had to have no copay. It meant they qualified for Medicaid, or what we call here Minnesota Cares, which is a health insurance policy that for a family of nine, let's say that normally we could expect that to cost $1,500 a month, they get it for zero. So when you added in these untaxable benefits to their income and then tried to back into a number for what you and I would have to earn before taxes in order to afford the housing benefits and the health care that they get, I came to the conclusion that a family of a typical American family, husband and wife, say three kids, that wants to have the same housing, the same benefits, and the same income would have to gross $83,000 in order to have the same level of income and benefits that that refugee family had. $83,000. Now, I'm a finance guy. I came from Wall Street, so these numbers I'm not, you know, pulling out of my shirt. I know how to do this stuff. We calculate here in Minnesota that a typical family costs state, federal, county, and city taxpayers every year $100,000. And that those expenses are attributable to cash assistance, housing, health insurance, and the big one, which is education. These kids tend in Minnesota, rather than having the 90 to 95% graduation rate that white kids have, they have, in my town, a graduation rate of 60%. And it takes those 60% that do graduate 6 years to get through school instead of four. So the cost to the local taxpayers through schooling is astronomical. Yeah. And when I went to our county board of commissioners recently and said, I'd like to share with you the most recent numbers from the federal government as to what this is costing our county, because I've pleaded with them, would you please get an outside accounting firm to do an audit to show what this is costing us so people know what their liability is? The answer that I got was, we will never let you talk to this public board because it would create chaos.
I can create some chaos. You know what I'm going to do, guys? I have a vision. I have a dream, Martin Luther King. I will buy a fleet of Greyhound buses and have this information streaming, and then we go into the clips of Hillary with her barking and her screaming and the close-ups of Pelosi talking about this shove through Obamacare before it was read, and then Mushel talking about, you know, the house, the White House being built by slaves and how poorly she's treated and all the racism and all that Mickey Mouse bullshit. I'll bet you I'll have droves of new recruits and converts here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, revolting against the refugees and probably closing of some mosques. What do you think, guys?
That's, sounds like a good dream. Get on the street, start marching.
You know,
it's a big issue because we've talked about it all the time. That it follow the money, you know, it's huge, this welfare system. And the thing where they don't assimilate by language either, so that costs all the system a lot of money for interpreters and trying to give them all this free welfare. You know, it's just crazy.
So what happens here, Eric, is that we pay these faith-based, cash-strapped agencies millions of American dollars. Well, first we pay, first, of course, you know, the United States is the single largest financier of the UN. So first we pay the UN to do their sort over, say, in Somalia. Then we pay these government, these faith-based agencies to drive the bus, meet them at the airport, debrief them, do whatever they do, bus them out to our counties, leave them at the family, at the human services doorstep, and drive away. And then we take over and put the orphans on our dime. The public finances this thing from start to finish. And what I have learned is that in large part, this program has become perverted and morphed into one component of the United States foreign policy to extend its influence in those parts of the world and take care of those feudal overlords and chieftains who are guys from CIA and State Department that are on the ground or over there in chaotic circumstances. They look around. They try to figure out who the power players are here, and when they figure it out, they start doing favors. Look, we're going to make you the man. Every time we send over money from the federal government to build hospitals, schools, whatever the case is, we'll make sure everybody in town knows that you're our point guard. And if we need to bring refugees back home, why don't you tell us who you want us to bring over? You can see how this would play out.
And we understand when they make that list to send them here, they don't send us their brightest and most intelligent, do they?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure how to think about that, because here's the flip side of that argument, it seems to me. And we saw this during the closing down of the Vietnam War, if you will, from Saigon. I contend, Eric, the people that are able to get out of the country and find their way halfway across the world, living in the most generous and productive social experiment that mankind has ever produced, the United States, they didn't get here by picking a Powerball lottery. I suspect that we are getting the best and the brightest, because they would have to be the ones that are shrewd enough to make sure they get on the list.
Yeah.
So in a sense, if I'm correct, we're doing Somalia a disservice, because the talent that they most need to rebuild the country, it's a brain drain as much as there's brains there, but we take the best talent that they might have and we take it away.
Hey guys, we're headed into our next break. I just had an idea. I wonder if I printed up posters of Somalian families and then put the dollar amount, an average dollar amount that each household is giving up to support their new
Muslim neighbors.
Their new Muslim neighbors say, you know what?
Yes.
You're losing this. Just like that, I gave that example to that 18-year-old roughneck about his paycheck, you know, after taxes, take 70
right.
of it and give it to his neighbor so they can sit there and smoke weed, eat pizza, drink beer, and watch porn so he can go back to work and support him. I'm going to go to every household and give them their new Muslim neighbors and say, this is how much in taxes you're paying to keep these people afloat so they can live here free off the system and better than you ever could, unless you make about 5-10 times more. I tell you what, we've got a lot of work to get done here, but you know what? You got to find the blessing in what a lot of people ask me, how'd you end up back here? Well, like I say, if I could have my hand in getting one more person to wake up and to inspire them to find their non-politically correct redneck selves to stand up and revolt against the most liberal, retarded, mentally disabled state, Minneapolis, and Mark Dayton. I'm doing my part. All right, we got to take our next break. We'll be right back. We got to fight, baby, fight.
If you are looking for a straightforward, conservative, good old boy who can also rant about all the madness, but seriously, Bella endorses Aaron Petilla with North Star Insurance. Aaron will take care of all your insurance needs with small-town service, and he will even save you some money. Tell Aaron Bella sent you. You can get Aaron at 952-856-6074. And that again is Aaron at 952-856-6074.
We are back, Bella D'Angelo and Bob Enos and Eric Olson. Hey, before we get going again, I want to give a quick shout out to, if you haven't had a chance, and when I say inspire your non-politically correct redneck self to go out and make a difference, guys, I haven't been shot at yet in my big oversized oil field pickup truck with Patriot over it. And I'm not even fear-filled because I do carry, but if you see me in town wearing my Rebel Red t-shirt with the Confederate flag on the back and then on the front, it's NFSE, and I can't exactly say what it is, but trust me, it does not stand for no fire safety for everyone. The other shirt is go out and make a difference or I'll kick your pansy ass. And then I've got another one that's got never forget, thank you for your service on one side, and then on the other side, Semper Fi and NFSE. And we've got dog caves. We also have sippy cups, and none of these would be possible if it weren't for a great guy, John Van Bergen. He is with Forest Lake Printing. He is a Trust Vets member, and I am dedicated to sponsoring and promoting the Trust Vets members because, you know what, they're great guys. Thank you for your service, but they've also pledged to help with this radio show. I also want to give a shout out to Dennis Davis. If you want to be involved in getting vets to vote, they give a preview of the 13-hour movie about Benghazi. They have phone banks to ask questions simply to get vets out to vote. I'm going to be spending some time there helping out this organization and giving thanks back to Dennis. Dennis is also helping on the radio show. And all of these guys can be found on trustvets.com. Let me back up here. Forest Lake Printing, 651-464-3116. And Dennis Davis, if you want to help vets to vote, 763-355-7299. Thing is, the power in able to change is, first of all, getting somebody to wake up, getting someone to listen, educating, and then motivating them to actually get up, go, and make a difference. And that's why I say in this show all the time, if I can inspire you and you don't have to wear the pink bra, the white t-shirts, the pink lip gloss, but get out, walk, talk, and think differently. I want to give this real quick example, and then I'll let Bob take it again. I learned something really powerful one day in the oil field, and that was this. I used to run around with a lot of kind of pretty lightweight stresses and worries when I look back on it. And it wasn't until one day I got taken up on George Patton Jr.'s rig, and I got up there, and I saw this massive machine and all of the complicated parts. I got to go over by the Star Wars chair. That's where the head driller sits and all of the equations going on there. And trust me, I've been at the rig when there was far too much third-party gas. You know, there was Wild Well, all these dangerous situations, which so many people didn't understand what we did in the oil field to afford you your lifestyle. You have no idea. But what it, in that defining moment, it made me stop and say, I don't know why I'm worrying about so many of these little things. I want everybody to get up tomorrow morning, and when you start worrying about these little things, we've got a lot bigger things to worry about. And if you thought Orlando, Florida was a one-time occurrence, all you have to do is look across the pond to Paris, to Belgium, to Israel. This is an everyday escape and survival of these barbaric. We are at war. There is no assimilating, and it is convert or die. And that's why getting involved and getting people to understand here in Minneapolis, I don't want to believe it's too late. Bob, you and I talked about that when I first met you. And you know what? We need a leader to be able to reverse the rest of the destruction of not only Minneapolis, but this country. Go ahead, Bob.
excuse me. I wanted to talk a bit about the heat that Donald Trump has been taking from all quarters ever since the Orlando episode with regard to his ramping up his calls for controlling Muslim immigration and, in fact, stopping it at least temporarily. And you know he's taking a lot of heat. You know, and you've heard President Obama say, oh, this isn't America's values. This isn't what America's about. I hate listening to the president tell me what my values are supposed to be. But I want to give you, and I won't belabor this, but what I want to tell your listeners, Bella, is that the United States has a history, a recent history, of having done in the past precisely what Donald Trump is suggesting now with halting Muslim immigration, and this is how it came about. In 1952, after World War II, 1952 was one of several amending, pieces of legislation to the Immigration Act in the United States. Because the war had just ended, because we were very concerned about communist infiltration at that time into the U.S., the Immigration Act was amended to give a sitting president the executive authority to limit immigration in those cases where he could see a clear and present danger. He didn't have to put this up to a congressional vote. He didn't have to wine and dine the Congress. In 1979, none other than Democratic President Jimmy Carter invoked that executive privilege after the taking of the hostages in Iran with the revolution by the Ayatollah Khomeini. He wanted to be able to show his naysayers that he was a strong president, so he invoked this piece of the Immigration Act, and as a result, the government brought in 16,000 Iranian students who were on expired passports and deported another 15,000 Iranians who were here illegitimately. The interesting part, or epilogue to that story, this is 1979. In 1980, before he left office, Jimmy Carter signed a bill which was the most far-reaching revamping of the Immigration Act that he forged along with Ted Kennedy and our current Vice President Joe Biden. And that was, among other things, the amendment that removed what had historically been a 150-year requirement called the public charge. And you all know it as meaning sponsors for immigrants. It meant if you came to this country as an immigrant, you had to have a sponsor, you had to have a job lined up, you had to have someone who was willing to accept financial liability if once you got here as an immigrant, your job went south. And it was the government's way of making sure you didn't wind up on welfare. In 1980, Carter, Kennedy, and Biden removed that requirement. And ever since, all you have to show is that you're on welfare.
Now all we need, and guys, I got to take it from here. Bob, thank you so much. You've been a great guest. I hope you come on the show again.
Thank you very much for having me. And Eric, it was a pleasure hearing from you.
Yeah, I appreciate you being on, Bob, and maybe we'll get you on the show down here one of these days.
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks again. Good luck.
Good day.
God bless. Bye. Hey, Eric, really quick, tell everybody where to find you.
Billings, Montana, Facebook, Eric Olson with an E-N, and I'm on Twitter under Eric Shrugged after the novel Atlas Shrugged. And then just track me there mostly and watch Google me. You'll find me in a lot of places. But I appreciate what you're doing, Bella, and let's keep fighting the fight.
Thank you. You're the best. Like I said, I just appreciate all that you've done. I appreciate all that everybody's doing to finally pull this thing together. Hey, the only thing you need to come to America is a sympathetic, Muzzy-loving thug. And you know what? If that's what you want, if you want to wake up to Orlando, Florida, and what's going on across the pond, all you have to do is vote in that Kim Jong bloated water buffalo hag that gives me night fright all the time. K Hillary. We've got to get up tomorrow. We've got to walk, talk, and think differently and get one more person listening, one more person tuning in, and one more person voting to get it right in November. I got to say good night. God bless America, and ciao for now.